Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us at what is a very difficult and painful time for all of us who care deeply about peace in the Middle East. I'm Deborah DeLee. I'm President and CEO of Americans for Peace Now. Again, I want to thank you for joining us, and I offer my condolences if any of you are here because you could not get into the Hillary Clinton hearings this morning. So this will be a good place to be. We've got a very distinguished group of panelists. I'm actually going to start by introducing them, and then I'm going to tell you how we're going to proceed this morning. I know that they will forgive me for shortening their very impressive bios so that we still do have some time for some questions. I'm going to start at this end with Yoram Perry, who is currently a visiting professor for Israel Studies at the American University. Yoram is the head of the Rothschild Caesarea School of Communication, the head of the Chaim Herzog Institute for Media, Politics, and Society. He's a professor at Tel Aviv University as well. Yoram was a political advisor to the late Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, and the editor-in-chief of the Israeli daily newspaper Devar, and also particularly relevant to our discussion today. He's the editor of several books, but among them, Generals in the Cabinet Room, How the Military Shapes Israeli Policy. Sitting to my left is Amjad Atala, who is the co-director of the Middle East Task Force New America Foundation. Amjad is also a senior affiliated expert with the Public International Law and Policy Group. Until recently, Amjad headed the Strategic Assessments Initiative, which is a nonprofit organization committed to providing legal and policy assistance to parties involved in negotiations in conflict and post-conflict situations. To my right is Raif Al-Amari. Raif is the advocacy director for the American Task Force on Palestine. Previously, Raif served in various senior positions with the Palestinian Authority, including senior advisor to the President, Mahmoud Abbas, and was the lead Palestinian drafter of the Geneva Initiative. And at that end is Andrew Whitley, who is the director of the representative office of UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees in the Near East. He worked in the UN for 13 years in various positions after having founded and directed Middle East Watch, now Human Rights, Middle East, and North Africa. He began his long career in the Middle East as a journalist, first with the BBC and later with the Financial Times. So we're very pleased to have such a distinguished panel with us. Our purpose today is to assess the prospects for progress on the Israeli-Palestinian peace front under the administration, under the new Obama administration. And obviously, any discussion of Middle East peace right now at this very tragic time, while war is raging in Gaza and southern Israel, we have to address the current hostilities and their impact on the efforts to push for peace, and we certainly will do that today. But what we'd really like to do is to look to the horizon beyond Gaza and the challenge of Hamas, and we would like to address the issue of Palestinian peace in a broader, more integrative way, particularly looking at what the Obama administration wants to do, and that is the way that they are inclined to look at the situation as well. Last month, APN published a blueprint for the Obama administration, laying out an agenda for them. Yes, thank you very much. I would hold it up. I don't have it in my hand. But we did distribute it there. It was written in November. It does not address the current crisis, and it is one among thousands and thousands of blueprints for the first 100 days that groups are producing. We think it's unique in that it is very practical. It is very doable. I would urge you to take a look at it. We've gotten very positive feedback from it. There are many that we hear that contact us constantly saying that the crisis in Gaza is the proof that there will not ever be a two-state solution. We believe that the crisis in Gaza is one more imperative that there must be a two-state solution. I would say that everybody at this table supports a two-state solution. And the last thing I would say before turning this over to our panelists, or before giving you some idea of how we're going to proceed today, is that it would be hard to say that one is optimistic at this particular time. But I do think it's important, particularly in light of the incoming Obama administration and the excitement of what's going to be happening in Washington this coming week. And that is a nonpartisan statement. I think it is important to still have hope. So I thank you for coming today, and if you have not yet put your phones on vibrate, I would ask you to do so now. Again, we are not going to have opening statements from our panelists. That will give those of you in the room more time to ask questions and direct this where you would like it to go. I am going to take the prerogative of the chair and ask each of our panelists one fairly broad opening question, and then I'm going to turn it over to you, and other panelists are more than welcome to comment, agree or disagree with anything that any of our panelists have said before we would then go on to the next question. I'm going to start over here with Yoram, and Yoram has just returned from Israel. So since everything in Israel, not unlike the U.S. or any place else, always revolves around political elections, I would like for you to begin by commenting on the relationship between the military operation and the upcoming elections. And in there, I would love if you would address sort of the dissent, opposition, support, where the Israeli people are right now.
Thank you, Deborah. Thank you for coming. It would have been much easier to talk about the topic a month ago, 2 months ago, before I went to Israel, and not now. Have seen the pictures from the Middle East, from Gaza, every day, and it really fill our heart with pain to watch it. But you have to look at it in a wider perspective, and one of it is, of course, your question about the elections. I haven't seen Israeli society united as it is today in all previous wars because of the wider perspective. You see the events of the last 2 weeks in Gaza, but Israelis remember what happened in the last 8 years. And these memories are very vivid. My wife, for example, who went with me to Israel, teaches at Sapir College in Shderot. Can you imagine yourself in her position in the last 6 years, that almost every day she has to interrupt her lecture and take all the students to the shelter because there is a bomb in the area. Some fell in the college itself, and some people were killed there in the last 8 years. You haven't heard about that, because if one person is killed, the media doesn't cover it. If hundreds are killed, the media enjoys it. So you have to look at it in a perspective. And Israelis have this very strong memory as of the beginning of the Second Intifada, with the suicidal attacks, most of which came from organizations like Hamas, etc. So you have to look at the reaction of the military, not so much as a calculated act taken by some crude politicians because of the elections, but a real desire of the people to say enough is enough, we cannot continue like that. Which brings me to the first point that I want to raise, that though I hate wars, and I will never support war, for any bad peace is better than a good war. There isn't such a thing as a good war. But you have to look at this war from a moral point of view as a just war. It's a reaction to an action taken by the Hamas deliberately against Israeli civilians for the last 8 years. So therefore, there is not much discussion about the elections. There are debates whether to postpone the elections or not. But no one is really attacked. Very few people say so, but the majority of the Israelis do not attack any politician for deciding this or that because of the elections. Olmert is going to leave the political scenery very shortly. And Barak, Netanyahu, and Tzipi Livni are not going to benefit much from this act or the other. It is true that the public opinion polls gave Barak and the Labour Party a few more percentage since the beginning of the war before the predictions were that the Labour Party will get about 12 or 13 seats. Now they have 15, 16 or 17 seats. But things can change. And if the war will not end soon, and there will be one major attack or one major accident or incident in which 10 or 15 Israeli soldiers will be killed, these four seats will disappear overnight. So everybody is. So the election is not really what stands behind the motivations of the politicians to go to war, or behind the assessment of the population of the war, whether it was right or a wrong war. And the majority of the Israelis, more than 80-85%, believe that it was a just war because Israel could not continue to live under permanent attack by Hamas from the Gaza Strip. The question that is open, of course, is what will be next? And what should the political solution be? And here you can distinguish today between three major perceptions. In a way, it's the Prime Minister, Olmert, Tzipi Livni in the center, and Barak to the left. Barak was the one, is the one who said that we should, he's the most forthcoming advocate to end the war as soon as possible. And he believes that we should indirectly negotiate with the Hamas. Of course, not directly and not openly, but make the Hamas involved in the negotiations to decide how to end the war. The middle position argues that we should not take Hamas into account, but we should try and end the war as soon as possible. While the right-wing extreme position, which now Olmert advocates, argues that we should try and pursue the war more to destroy the Hamas. If you ask me personally, I don't think that one party to the conflict should try to destroy the other party to the conflict. And I believe that Israel should try and find as soon as possible a solution. Whether directly or indirectly, it's a different question, and I guess we'll get to that later. But I believe that we should try and end it as soon as possible, because every day that pass, there is the probability there will be more civilian casualties on both sides is very high. One short point which I really feel like saying, because I see it in the international press. I came through Europe and I see it a lot in the international press, particularly in Europe. I hate this measuring of casualties with moral values. These are two different planes. I don't believe that to kill two persons is double moral. It's twice as moral as if you kill only one. I think that if you kill one person is a horrible thing. It's the worst thing that can happen. So corpse counting looks to me a very ugly thing to do. The question is who is right and who is wrong. Unfortunately, we have some people who are a little more right, and some who are a little more wrong. It's not black and white in this case. But to count only the figures and to say you are morally wrong because you killed more than the other one, it's a beautiful game for the media, but that's not a moral position. The moral position should be what are the causes for the conflict? Who began the conflict? Who had a better political or diplomatic solution to the conflict? And who rejected that, etc., etc. So while we all, from an emotional point of view, suffer from seeing these horrible views and horrible pictures, we should analyze the war on moral grounds and in political terms, and not based on emotions only. Thank you.
Okay. So, does anybody on the panel want to comment?